Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Glad to have you with us. We're going to have a usual Follow the Money show today and a very interesting subject, and that is phased retirement. And this is the government program that, once it gets rolling, is supposed to allow people to work part-time for an indeterminate period and mentor their possible successors. And it's something that's caught the attention of a lot of people. It's been kicking around now for 2 years. Nothing has happened on it. And we asked Julie Perkins to come in. Julie is a partner with Shaw Bransford. And by virtue of an article she wrote for the Federal Managers Association magazine and the research she's done, we now hereby proclaim her the world's leading authority on phased retirement. Julie, thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me.
Fools rush in and all that sort of thing.
Right.
Let me get to one. We asked people if they had questions about this, and several emailed them, and we will get to them. But one of them here is it's not something you can answer necessarily, but he says, my patience with Congress OPM and my agency is waning. I've been informed by my agency that the following has been completed. One, drafted a tentative policy document. Two, created a draft enrollment, mentoring, and termination agreements. Three, developed a frequently asked question and answer document, obtained a focus report, the total number of phased retirement eligibles now through December 31, 2015, developed implementation options and recommendations to forward to stakeholders for review and approval. And he says, given all of this, how come my agency hasn't entered into phased retirement? And I know you can't answer that, but you address some of the problems in your piece in the FMA magazine, that some of the things that agencies had to look at here before they leap.
Right. And I imagine some of their concerns are the making sure that everyone knows, so to speak, the rules of the road, that decisions about whose application gets approved and gets denied is fairly consistent, whether or not they're just targeting, maybe they're doing a test study on a classification or a group of employees within the agency to see how things roll with that. I think that OPM gave agencies such broad discretion on what it means to be a mentor and how to implement the program, how to approve applications, whether or not to have an appeal process, that agencies are stuck because the last thing you want to do is have this backfire on you and people complain about unfair treatment.
Well, it reminds me a little bit of the buyout program when it started in defense, and many things do start in defense. The pay-for-performance system also started in defense, but they seem to be the biggest kid on the block and innovative for whatever reason. But it started in defense, then it spread to other agencies, and for a while there it was, yeah, you want a buyout? Here's a buyout. It was sort of sowing them out there. Mm-hmm. And then they either wised up or the needs changed, and they were started giving them very selectively. They were giving them to specific grades. They were giving them to specific jobs, and they were even targeting them geographically. So you might say this is for all GS-15 field agents in the Agriculture Department or Internal Revenue Service, but very limited in scope. And that may be one of the problems they're anticipating with this.
Right. I mean, OPM, in their comments to people's and agencies, individuals and agencies' comments about the proposed regulations, said, well, sure, you could have supervisors or non-supervisors, people in a collective bargaining unit, people outside the unit, and all these people may qualify for your program. And depending on your collective bargaining agreement, a part-time employee may fall out of that that collective bargaining unit. So what happens to that individual? There's a lot of questions that an agency has to consider, and I agree with you. I think they should target perhaps, if the idea is some sort of succession planning, then perhaps it's more of the higher grade level individual first, But then if you think about it, there's people with institutional knowledge that are not GS-15s that you want to have them impart on someone coming up behind them, or non-supervisory employees. It's just so wide open. And I think the fact that OPM acknowledged that you could go in so many different directions with this, that agencies may be kind of a little frozen.
Yeah.
There's too many choices.
Yeah, and nobody wants to be first in something like this. Mm-hmm. Something you said made me think of this. With the pay for performance, when it was implemented, it was blocked in the Department of Homeland Security by a lawsuit, I believe, but it went ahead in defense. But because of union objections, they hadn't been consulted, and they just didn't trust it. It was a Bush administration initiative, and they just didn't trust it. So the unions opted out, and so that left defense would only give pay for performance to non-bargaining unit employees, and that raised the issue of favoritism, because they tended to do better salary-wise as far as pay raises than the people in the bargaining units who were excluded from it. So then you had yet another charge of discrimination. Right. They didn't want it to be done to their people, and then when it went in play, they resented the results, and they said defense was punishing them.
Right, and I think that's part of the concern is, well, if we take this step, what's going to happen? Well, I would imagine unless you don't want to take away so much discretion of the design official who's approving the application that it's like, it's too lockstep, if you will. But if you have tremendous discretion to approve or deny the application, then you're going to have people that feel left out. Because they're not maybe the boss's favorite. One of the criteria an agency could have is that your boss has to like almost give you a recommendation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you have to be the teacher's pet.
Yeah.
Or you're going to get those accusations. And as you know, the EEO system is already bogged down or broken.
Yeah.
So I imagine they are anticipating a flood of complaints that direction, or grievances, by the unions or by individuals. So I kind of see a mess.
Yeah. Before we get into some of these specific questions, could you kind of go over what your understanding of what phased retirement is going to look like, how long it's going to last, what kinds of people are going to get it, the pay breakdown, what happens to leave and all that. It's covered in your article, but not everybody has access to that.
Sure. So if you have been full-time employees of a government agency for the last 3 years, and for CSRS employees, if you have 30 years and you're 55 or 20 and 60, or for FERS, if you are 30, have 30 years in and you have the minimum retirement age, or 20 and 60, then you can apply. And what it means is that you and the agency reach an agreement over how long you'll be part-time, and it's 50%. That's it. It's not lower. You can't ask for, 30 hours. It'll be 20 hours a week, basically. And of that time, approximately about 4 hours has to be for mentoring purposes. There were many people in the management association community that wanted the mentoring, that you were to mentor people that were coming up behind you, right? Because the whole point is succession planning. OPM, again, declined to narrowly define what mentoring was and left it up to the agencies. And they said, well, it could be that you mentor across agency. And yes, maybe a formal mentoring program would be helpful, but it's not required in order for someone to enter into this phased retirement program. So you become a part-time employee, and let's say you agree you're going to do it for 18 months. And then you're treated as a part-time federal employee. So all the rights of the part-time federal employee apply to you. And, you know, in terms of holiday, if you have to work on a holiday, if that's how your schedule works, then you'll have to work on the holiday. You'll accrue, you can participate in Flex Plan and all other benefits programs, excuse me, and your part-time employment status does count toward the years of service. They estimate, you know, instead of getting your retirement pay or a full-time pay, you're going to get somewhere in between, because you're going to get half of what you're eligible for at that moment and then half salary. So you will be getting more than you would if you went to full retirement.
Yes.
And for some people, that's a big benefit.
Yeah, okay. Got a lot more questions about that, but Lauren Larson, our producer, wants us to take a break here. Be right back on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM.
Eagles Hoops fans, tune into Federal News Radio 1050 AM Monday evening, February 2nd at 7 o'clock for American University Basketball's AU Hoop Talk with Coach Brennan Radio Show. Get coaches' recap on the Eagles contest versus Army and Navy, as well as preview of AU's game at Holy Cross, tipping off just after the show at 7:30 that night. Listen to archived segments of all AU Hoop Talk with Coach Brennan shows throughout the season online under the multimedia tab of AUEagles.com. That's AU Hoop Talk with Coach Brennan Monday, February 2nd at 7 on Federal News Radio 1050 AM.
Tom Temin hosts The Federal Drive weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Listen each morning for breaking news updates, summaries of the biggest federal news stories impacting you and your agency, and interviews with senior leaders about why they make the decisions they do about mission. Download Federal Drive radio interviews and read articles online at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin is sponsored by High Point Global, experts in citizen experience.
And now the business of cloud with Vion Corporation, powered by Hitachi Data Systems Federal. Here's Steve Pico, VP of Federal Sales for Vion, on cloud as a procurement acquisition conversation.
I think the fact that we're having these dialogues around procurement and acquisition strategies versus technology is in and of itself a healthy step. This is really where it gets hard. So the technologies are out there. The solutions are out there. It's just a matter of helping IT and helping the folks that need it on the mission side find their path through the procurement and acquisition jungle, right? And helping the procurement acquisition people understand the IT directions, right? And I think that's the dialogue. They still seem a bit disjointed, and we can get a little closer to that, and that'll be a wonderful step.
Let Vion give you cloud confidence and help your agency design, implement, and support a flexible solution that meets the needs and priorities of your agency. To hear more of this interview, go to federalnewsradio.com, search Business Cloud, or learn more at vion.com/cloud.
How do outreach organizations assist government agencies in delivery services? What dynamics lead to effective collaboration between these outreach organizations and government programs? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores collaboration between government and outreach organizations, a case study of the Department of Veterans Affairs with Professors Lael Kaiser and Susan Miller, on a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors. Tune in on Mondays at 11 a.m. for the Business of Government Hour on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
Attention government financial professionals. Join the Association of Government Accountants National Leadership Training Conference, February 11th and 12th at the Ronald Reagan Building. The NLT sessions will help you excel as leaders in today's competitive and complex environment. Don't miss this opportunity to hear best practices, find solutions to shared challenges, network with your peers, and learn from top government financial management leaders and industry experts. Register today at agacgfm.org.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn, talking about phased retirement and talking with Julie Perkins from Shaw Bransford, a partner in Shaw Bransford, and she is the new face of phased retirement. She's written a really excellent article in the Federal Managers Association magazine, and I don't know if people can get that online. I know obviously members get the magazine, but I'm not sure if others can, but I thought we'd walk through this. And you already established in the first half that the sort of the criteria for being eligible for this. And I believe you said you need to be a full-time employee with at least 3 years of service. On CSRS, you have to be retirement eligible. That's age 55 with 30 years or 50 with 20 years or whatever that category is. I think if you're a FERS employee, 30 years or with a minimum retirement age or 20, 60. Again, have to be retirement eligible. And then the deal is, I say I'm the person, I'm the poster boy that gets to do this. I work 20 hours a week, and I spend 20% of that time mentoring. Okay. So, and I mean, I was asking you during the break, suppose I wanted to get have Monday and Friday off, which would be paradise for a lot of people. Is that doable under this?
Well, under the regulations, it's not, it's up to you and the agency how you work out that part-time schedule. It has to be 50%. It can't be. They've left room for regulations about other forms of part-time, but right now it has to be 50%. And I don't see any reason, based on these regulations, that you couldn't get the Friday off.
If they're going to go that far, then obviously they think you're a valuable resource, like to keep you a while. Is there a time limit on this? Is it 6 months? 18
it's
months?
However long you and the agency want it to be, and also you're not bound by it. So you may enter into this part-time arrangement and decide that you'd rather just go to the beach, right? And you're done. It's not working for you as a part-time employee. So you can stop it.
Yeah.
You haven't signed a contract. You don't have to fulfill the terms of the length of time. Or you can decide, you know what, I'd much rather go back to being a full-time employee.
Oh, interesting. So you can go home again.
You can ask, right.
Okay.
Or you can even go to another agency.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, and again, this is all the agency option. This is a government program. It works if they say it works. And if you can, you can't just announce that you're coming back, or you can't just announce that you are going to another agency to do this phased retirement. I mean, everybody's got to agree.
Right. The other agency has to have that as part of their program. Or maybe you go to the other agency full time. But there's certain timing criteria as to when you have to withdraw from this phased retirement before, you know, you go to the other agency.
Okay.
But you can opt out. If it's just not working for you 6 months in and you had thought you'd be there for a year, you can say, you know what, I'm moving on to full retirement.
Well, this really is, and you mentioned the fears of discrimination complaints and that, and the devil really is in the details with a program like this, because it's all people. It's somebody's getting a favor and somebody's not. So here's a question from Marty. It says, phased retirement and the voluntary contributions program under CSRS. I'm trying to build up my voluntary contribution account to the maximum 10% of my lifetime earnings. This should be in excess of $200,000, I think he said. I eventually want to roll over to a Roth IRA. If I was allowed to participate in phased retirement, would my additional salary while in phased retirement qualify as part of my lifetime earnings? Also, would I have to make a Roth transfer before I retire, or can I continue in the VC program into phased retirement? And I'm sure you can't answer that latter one.
About Roth transfers, right. I would suggest they talk to their benefits.
Yeah, because you got to be sure with this. But I would think that whatever your federal earnings are during a 40-hour pay period, half time, I would think that would count toward your lifetime earnings.
Right,
obviously.
And your lifetime service.
Yeah.
So that's also the attractiveness of this program, is that you're still a federal employee, you can still apply for benefits, and it still is part of your whole retirement package in terms of time in.
Someone from Ogden, Utah asked us, she's not talking about phased retirement, but it's a similar question. If she works, she's now retired, she wants to come back into government, and they've told her about the offset, so she can only earn so much that it's offset by her federal annuity. Mm-hmm. And she says she'll be losing money, but I think psychologically she feels like she's losing money because she's not getting double, but she's not losing money. You can't.
No,
right?
You can't.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
It's to benefit everybody.
Yeah. Here's one from Tim with the Army. He says, employees participating in this phased retirement program move from full-time to part-time. What are some of the downside issues of becoming part-time? I understand you earn leave at a lesser disproportionate rate. I've also heard that if you're scheduled to work a holiday, such as Christmas, you either work or take paid leave. And you mentioned that earlier on. Do you know how that works?
Well, everything is pro rata in terms of accrual. You're treated as any other federal employee who's part-time.
Mm-hmm.
Your schedule is as been determined. And I'd have to look at the specific regulations for part-time when it falls on a federal holiday. You're not treated any differently simply because you're partly retired. You fall into that category as a part-timer.
Yeah.
Who's also collecting retirement benefits.
Well, and the other part of the question, that's really, I guess, a $64,000 question, which probably neither of us are qualified, but what are the downsides of going part-time? And I know I used to know a retirement planner, a financial planner, and he would counsel husband and wife, if there was such a thing, bring them together, and he would usually turn to the wife and he'd say, in retirement you will have twice the husband and half the income.
Right.
You know, and that was a laugh line, but it's also true.
It is true. And I think part-time employees may feel that they're not in the loop on things.
Yep.
You're missing meetings. You're just not, you're part-time. You're treated a little differently. Is it worth it to go and do that? Well, that's up to you. You may get a kick out of mentoring, or you may feel financially that this is the best avenue for you that allows you to have that extra time. Or you may consider outside employment. And as long as, keep in mind, you're still a federal employee, so you still have to meet, get approval if necessary for outside employment. But there you are working part-time and maybe also being employed elsewhere.
Well, you're different analogy, but you're sort of like a two-term president in the sixth year of an eight-year
right.
term. You are the ultimate lame duck, in this case, in your office.
Right. I mean, you're going from probably a
everybody
very,
knows.
If you're a senior level, GS-15 that's used to, managing a whole division, then you're going to part-time status.
Yeah.
And people have sort of moved on all around mm-hmm. you. And that may be not to everyone's sort of egotistical benefit.
You might expect fewer luncheon invitations,
right.
things like that. See,
right, you're not as important to people.
Yeah.
And that is hard for people to realize appreciate.
I think a lot of us, those mm-hmm. of us who have left certain jobs and let it be known, you see how quickly your aura.
Right.
Here's one from Peg S.
Right.
She says, quite a few of us here at the IRS are interested in phased retirement. When you reach a certain age, the energy just leaves you. Please direct the question that for every one of us who's willing to do this, it allows the government to maybe hire one full-time employee for every two who decide to work part-time. As far as mentoring, it's what management does every single day with their employees. No big deal. This would also allow the knowledge not to leave all at one time, the famous tsunami or brain drain.
Mm-hmm.
I have a unit of employees who, within 5 years, from now, 15, I will go from 15 down to 7, very seasoned employees whose knowledge is unbelievable. Maybe by working part-time, that would enable the agency to gradually fill this void. And I guess that's one of the purposes of it. Huh?
Right. I mean, Peg really has pointed out all the issues and the reasons for phased retirement is that this whole tsunami everyone's waiting on, she anticipates losing half her
yeah.
employees. And that the phased retirement program is supposed to at least slow down the exits of these people with all the institutional knowledge and expertise to the extent they want to stick around.
Anything you want to sum up here? Because I know you have an important meeting and we appreciate you coming up here.
Well, thank you for having me. But, I already noticed that DHS and I think it's the Social Security Administration has delayed implementation. OPM had said that they were open to applications in November of 2014.
Yeah.
So I think we're all in a wait-and-see mode. I imagine there'll be disgruntled people that want to file a claim or something. And I would hope that the agencies are making the policies clear enough, but not so rules-driven, if you will, that people just don't want to jump through the hoops to even go into the program to make it really worthwhile, because I think there's some positive benefits to this.
Well, I hope after the first agency makes the leap and implements these things, we can have you come back and take a look at their plan and see how this will work out.
I would love to. That'd
All right.
Great.
Thank you, Julie Perkins, partner with Shaw Bransford. And we'll be right back here after a word from the sponsors. And we'll be talking with Andy Medici, senior writer with Federal Times, here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM.
So what are your plans after graduation?
I'm going to Impersonal, Colossal, and Intimidating University.
Interesting.
Yeah, at first I was thinking about the College of Irrelevant Majors or the University of Zero Job Prospects. What about you?
I'll be at the University of STEM Degrees in Today's Hottest Fields.
Huh? Sounds kind of weird.
It's also known as the University of Hands-On Learning in Small Classes or the University of Being Taught by Real Industry Experts.
You sure that's what you want?
Yeah. You know, you might want to look into it.
I don't know. Sounds like a place that's setting you up to be all job ready and successful or something.
Today, Capital College is changing its name to Capital Technology University. We've expanded our degree programs and capabilities to prepare you for the tech career you want. We even have a job offer guarantee, ensuring you'll be employed in your degree field within 90 days of graduation. Stop by the Capital Technology University campus or visit us online at theuniversityof.net and learn more about the University of never having to live in your parents' basement.
And now it's time for another FedGuard Factor, career essentials for federal employees.
Attention federal managers, supervisors, and law enforcement officers. Are you missing out on a key benefit worth thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars? You are eligible to save up to 50% on the cost of professional liability insurance, and FedGuard can show you how. FedGuard can help you take advantage of this benefit and cover you against massive legal fees that may be required to defend you against charges that anyone can levy against you.
Learn more at FedGuard.com. That's FedGuard.com. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Weekday mornings 6 to 9, Tom delivers the latest breaking federal news, headlines, and fascinating interviews with federal employees and contractors who make a difference for their agency. Download the radio interviews and read the articles online at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin is sponsored by GEICO. See how much more you can save on your auto insurance with special federal discounts. Visit geico.com/gov today.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Federal News Radio's Francis Rose is on Twitter. Follow him at FRoseWFED for a behind-the-scenes look at his in-depth radio show. Acquisition and Industry Thursday on Federal News Radio. At 3, listen for The Coalition for Government Procurement's Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron. Federal contracting experts from both inside and outside of government give their views on the intersection of procurement policy and process, and hear from companies themselves on policy, regulations, and trends on Industry Chatter with Francis Rose, Thursdays at 4. Acquisition and Industry Thursday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. A reminder that all of our shows are stored on our homepage here, so you can listen to them at any time. And you may want to mark this one because Julie Perkins gave a very good rundown of what the phased retirement program is going to probably look like. It's of interest to a lot of people. Now we're going to talk with Andy Medici, senior writer at Federal Times and my favorite cleanup batter, about what's going on in the rest of the government. Andy, you with us?
Mike?
Hey, thank you. Thank you, sir, for being here. Listen, we were talking or emailing each other about topics, and you said you could talk about the decline in overall federal employment and how it's been going down for the last 3 years. Is that correct?
That's correct. You know, federal government's lost about 80-some thousand jobs in the last 3 or 4 years. You know, it's these budget cuts, and every year agencies, mostly through attrition, they shed employees, they don't replace them, you know, they don't fill holes where they shouldn't. So, you know, 80,000 plus have been lost over the last 3 years.
Well, that seems so counterintuitive. I mean, particularly with the fact that the economy is booming, but there are a lot more people filing tax returns than ever before. The tax laws are not getting any simpler, and it seems the IRS intentionally is taking many of these hits.
Well, you know, the IRS has borne the brunt of a lot of Americans' ire, and Congress is no different. They take a look at the IRS and they see an agency that they don't like, and while it provides necessary services and, of course, a lot of the revenue for the government, they have been cutting it the last few years. Their budget's lower than I think in any time since, you know, 2006, 2007, and they're feeling the hurt. There are more and more people filing tax returns every year, and more people who need help, and there's fewer IRS employees to help them.
Well, some of this comes out of the fallout of the situation in Cincinnati where the IRS was accused, and there was some evidence that they were giving conservative groups a hard time or an extra long look-see as they were applying for tax exemptions or preferred status. Several people resigned. They tried to make a link to Washington, obviously the White House and the Justice Department. Didn't seem to happen, but many people are just angry at the IRS because they think it's been involved in politics.
Well, and, you know, those were, you're right, they tried to link it to the White House. You know, and as a scandal, it's kind of faded away. And some people did resign, some people did step down from their positions. But at the end of the day, you know, a lot of people get worried, you know, Congress should maybe use a scalpel instead of a hammer when it comes to some of these things. So when you cut the entire agency's budget, what you're really doing is just making it harder to collect revenues, enforce the tax code, help people with their tax problems.
Well, I've talked to some former fairly high up IRS people and at least one retired member of Congress, and they're genuinely concerned about voluntary compliance. Apparently, of now, we have about 80% of the American people sort of voluntarily on their own pay the taxes that are owed. They may not like it. They may not think they're fair, but they pay it without it being pursued. And this is the envy of the rest of the world in most places where not paying taxes is a combat sport, you know. Many people are afraid that the lack of people and the other duties that the IRS has been assigned, it's going to cut down on audits, genuine audits, and that this will eat into voluntary compliance.
I think that's a legitimate fear. There's a lot of IRS activities that involve auditing a very specific number, and when that number goes down, not only is the amount of recovered money, you know, money that people actually owed in taxes goes down, but it does increase the risk that other people will say, well, hey, you know, maybe I should give it a shot and see, you know, roll the dice. A lot of the people that the IRS audit are significantly higher earners, have much more funds, much more complicated financial arrangements than, for example, you or I might have.
Yeah.
And it takes time, it takes energy, and it takes resources to make sure that that group of people are paying the correct amount in taxes.
Well, depending on who you ask and who does the calculations, the IRS makes about $7 to $14 for every $1 that it spends, and I haven't seen anybody quarrel with the lowest figure, and that's a pretty good return on an investment.
And that's a lot of the argument for boosting IRS budgets and far beyond what they might have been at their peak. If you add more people, you get more recovered money, you get more people helping others with their taxes, you just sort of get a lot more for your money than you might elsewhere. And I think for a lot of people, that's the frustrating part, is that government, a lot of people believe, you know, government well-funded does good work. And when it doesn't get funded, it does poor work. And then that cycle continues when people just point to the agency and say, you're doing bad work, we should cut your budget even further.
Yeah. Well, you and I have both been around long enough to know that in Washington, the wheel gets reinvented with some regularity every 2 years, every 4 years. every six for certain. And one of the things that I see looming in the background is that at some point the revenue is going to be down. The people who are, maybe some of the people who even caused this problem, are going to demand that the government make more money and collect money that they haven't been able to do it. And they will suggest, lo and behold, that we hire private contractors, the meaner than the junkyard dog debt collectors, give them 24% of the take and let them go after the money that the IRS can't get because it doesn't have the money. Do you think that's going to reinvent itself? We've had it at least twice now. It went in and it went into effect. It outraged so many people that Congress, which had ordered it stopped, and then they did it again.
And I think that's a real worry. You know, you're right. It does come around, and it's sometimes part of the background discussion overall around the IRS. When you do that, though, what you're really doing is taking a chunk of taxpayer money when you don't really have to, right? Why hire contractors when an IRS employee will do it for the certain salary that you pay them and get that $7 to $14 in return? So I think for a lot of people, the idea of bringing in contractors has been discussed before, and it's always a concern that it will be discussed again.
Well, this was done, I think the last one ended about 6 years ago, and the Congress brought contractors and IRS officials before it, and there were complaints that the private citizens were being harassed by these contractors, calls late at night, threatening their jobs, threatening physical violence and that sort of thing, the kind of thing that an IRS employee in his or her right mind would never do. And the Congress said, stop this crazy program, but Congress had ordered them to do it in the first place.
Well, that's one of those issues where we come back to, you know, what's inherently governmental and what we should trust government with, and we've talked about this before. But a lot of people, while they might decry government programs, for example, on the Medicare side, would you rather have a federal employee decide what should be paid and what shouldn't and have their salary be set, or someone in the private sector where a lot of that motivation comes from getting a certain percentage of that money that they collect or getting a certain amount in bonus because they've denied or collected or done a certain amount of those things? And that's what makes private debt collectors so aggressive, is that they have a financial incentive to do as much as possible.
Well, there's another issue there, and I know you're certainly well aware of this. It concerns many people, and that is that the Internal Revenue Service and the Social Security Administration have our number, literally. They know everything about us. They know our income, at least the legally reported income. They know our Social Security number, our birth dates, presumably our mother's maiden name, and they have all this information. And we wish nobody had it, but hope they keep it under lock and key and all that. But once you hand a file over to a private contractor, you have to hand over a certain amount of this information, maybe all of it. And I want to ask you about the ramifications of that after we take a break here on federalnewsradio.com.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Thorne Research and Pathway. High Points Elevate, the citizen experience solution providing eyes and ears to federal agencies to help improve customer or citizen satisfaction. High Point provides software and IT infrastructure, program management and training to multi-channel touchpoints, and records and analyzes trending data, including social media, while optimizing the citizen experience. High Point has driven improvements in end-user customer satisfaction scores. At one federal customer, scores are up to 95% out of 100. High Point provides a real-time look at your customer's experience when they touch your agency. They've seen how effective touch points like contact centers, websites, and mobile apps serve as the front line to connect the public to needed government services. High Point's Elevate solution helps government support their vision of achieving a citizen-centered mission. Citizens expect better public service. Convert expectation into reality with High Point. Get started today. Go to highpointelevate.com. That's highpointelevate.com.
A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in every Monday at 10:05 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee. For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your career retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, sponsored by WEPA, Mondays at 10:05 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. for topics and ideas that could change your future. For free information, visit NITPINC.com and WAEPA.org.
Why pay 19% credit card interest on money when you can refinance your mortgage, pay off your car note, credit cards, and student loans into a very low interest rate? Save money every month and improve your bottom line. Call New American Funding at 800-827-RATE, 800-827-7283.
Not licensed to lend in Washington, D.C., NMLS 6606, licensed by the State of Maryland Commissioner of Financial Regulations, license number 13245, licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission Bureau of Financial Institutions, license number MC3638, terms and conditions subject to change without notice. Equal housing lender.
Profile America, Wednesday, January 28th. As the Great Depression approached its worst, Wisconsin made the nation's first governmental direct relief effort for the unemployed. On this date in 1932, it enacted unemployment insurance, soon followed by a half dozen other states before the Social Security Act in mid-decade moved all states to adopt such programs by 1937. Wisconsin's program issued its first unemployment check in August in the amount of $15. By 2011, states and local governments took in almost $88 billion from the payroll tax to fund unemployment insurance, but they spent nearly $122 billion in such assistance. States have nearly $3 trillion in combined insurance trust funds, but an aggregate deficit of $18.5 billion for covering unemployment. Profile America is in its 18th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
Attend Acquisition Excellence 2015 at the Grand Hyatt in Washington, D.C. on March 3rd. Join senior government and industry leaders in addressing today's tough acquisition challenges. Hosted by the American Council for Technology Industry Advisory Council in collaboration with DHS, GSA, and the VA Acquisition Academy, this program offers provocative discussions, challenges, and government-led training sessions and is an ACT IAC Academy accredited event. Register now at actiac.org. That's actiac.org.
Sign up for our Daily Headlines email alert for the latest news affecting feds and contractors. Search alerts at federalnewsradio.com to sign up today.
Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey talking with Andy Medici from the Federal Times. And our producer, Lauren Larson, says we're getting a lot of calls today, so we appreciate having lots of you out there. And a reminder that all of our shows are archived on our homepage at www.federalnewsradio.com. This show will be archived as well. You can hear what Julie Perkins had to say about phased retirement, and then we're definitely going to have her back on the show, and we'll give you plenty of warning. Andy, when we left, I was ranting about the evils of having private contractors collect taxes, and I guess the idea is if there's anything worse than having the IRS collect taxes, it's anybody else.
I think that's true. You know, I wouldn't call what you said a rant, but mm-hmm. I think, you know, maybe we can get there in a few minutes. But a lot of people they don't like the IRS, or they don't like government programs.
Sure.
But when it comes to the service, they wouldn't really want someone else doing it, right? And that's really because of the profit motive, and because, you know, private, there isn't, you know, a lot of trust when it comes to, for example, private debt collectors. If you said, you know, do you not like the IRS? And they said, of course, I don't really like mm-hmm. the IRS. Well, do you like that settlement company that comes after yeah. you when you don't pay a bill, you know? And I think people would, if faced with that choice, choose the IRS.
Yeah, the pit bull recovery company.
And it's one of those things that we talk about, which is what's inherently governmental. You talked about, you know, our data and the information that the IRS has, and should it be in other people's hands? And we've talked about this a lot, and I think a lot of people do believe that the IRS performs a very inherently governmental function, even if they don't like what they do.
Yeah, right. And there are tax protesters all over the place. There's we got a new Congress. the Republicans have added strength in the House and taken over the Senate. Some people are thinking this is the end of civilization as we know it for federal workers. Others are saying that this is going to continue the gridlock, which everyone decries, but actually federal workers have done pretty well out of gridlock in the last couple of years because not only nothing good happened to them, but even more importantly, nothing bad happened to them. What's out there on the horizon?
Well, this is one of the situations where you will see bills that maybe used to just get stopped in the House. They'll pass the Senate now, and President Obama will have to decide whether to veto them. And I think that's the danger that a lot of federal employees fear, which is it's not so much does the bill pass and does President Obama sign it. It's what gets traded away during complex negotiations over taxes or a continuing resolution that might be federal employee benefits or pay that gets traded away in that bargain. And I think for a lot of federal employees, that's a legitimate fear. The increase in pension contributions that was passed a couple of years ago, that came about as part of a larger negotiation. So while President Obama might veto, for example, wholesale cuts to the federal government, would he veto a bill that has everything he wanted but one small piece of it is something about, you know, federal pay or federal benefits? And that's a harder question to answer, really. But a lot of federal employees fear that, you know, he would let that through if he got, you know, the 98% that he wanted.
Well, I love talking about Machiavellian things to somebody named Medici. This just seems very fitting somehow. But, you know, looking at this, under the Obama administration, you had 3 years of federal pay freeze, 2 years with one percentage point raise each. Now a group of Democrats in the House and Senate, all Democrats, have introduced legislation that would give federal workers a 3.8%, and many of these are people who supported the freeze and who supported the 1% raise. But suddenly now they're in the opposition, they're in the minority, and you know some people think this is a ploy that just to make the Republicans look bad in the eyes of the large federal family. Others think that that President Obama might veto it. Might approve it because he's got nothing to lose.
Well, you know, the pay freezes, those came about because of that, you know, the economic recession. And I think what people forget a lot is that Congress is filled with politicians. And for a lot of people out in the private sector, they look at federal pay and benefits and they're jealous and they don't like it. And instead of thinking about improvements to the private sector, it is usually more easier to try and claw someone else down. And it, you know, if we go back decades, and I'm sure you can pull up some of this information about this, but, you know, in the 60s and 70s, federal pay and private sector pay and the benefits were relatively similar. There were a lot more defined benefit plans in the private sector. There were a lot more unionized workforces. There was a lot of similarities between the workforces, but over time, they've grown apart. And for a lot of people, there is some resentment there or some anger there, especially on the benefits side. So federal employees, you know, when they look at Congress, a lot of Congress reflects the sort of anger that a lot of people might feel towards someone who has sort of a better package. And that's really the worry, I think, is that now that you have a partisan divide, that becomes significantly a partisan issue, which means that it's going to be harder to ever get maybe something larger than what the president's willing to give.
Well, that's an extremely good point because, you know, we're here in Washington and we're sort of Fed-centric and we understand the government, we think, better than people in a lot of places. We're sympathetic. Everybody's got a friend and a neighbor who works for the government and we know what good work they do. But out beyond the Beltway, people have lost jobs. I personally know three people in our particular industry who took a 25% pay cut, another took a 20% pay cut, and yet another took a 5% cut temporarily. But that's tough. You know, 5% is doable, 25% not so much. And I think one of the things that started this trend was the state and local governments suddenly coming up bankrupt and rolling back benefits for state and government workers who had been for a long time the fastest growing and numerically part of the economy.
Well, and I think it goes even deeper than that. You know, I have, you know, my wife's family, they're good, hardworking people. A lot of them live in Ohio where there used to be very strong auto industry and they could work their 5 days a week or their shifts a week, get something along the lines of a pension and a salary to support the family. And you know, nowadays, you know, it's a lot of them are down to 2 days a week or 3 days a week. And I think looking at someone else or looking at the federal benefits that were much similar decades ago, it's hard not to feel some resentment or anger. And I think over time, federal employees have realized that while the private sector, in many ways, the experts are making more, there are a lot of people who are making less, and they're sending people to Congress. And those members of Congress don't feel any particular loyalty towards federal employees.
Well, and closer to home, too, the Washington Post, which was family-owned by the Graham family for decades, under new ownership. And one of the things the new owner has done is eliminate the defined pension benefit for future hires. So it'll be up to them with their 401k and Social Security. But the pension for life is gone. And that's a factor that's happening with private, including some very generous private employers all over the country.
And just today, if you've read some reports, there have been some reports about the Military Retirement Modernization Commission, and some of their recommendations look a lot along the lines of reducing some of those defined benefits in exchange for maybe putting service members into a defined contribution, maybe some of that into TSP, and and pushing some of those retirements from a 20 year to only being able to cash them in when you're 59. And for a lot of people, those trends are ever increasing. And people in my generation, for example, I don't think for the most part have really gotten a chance at those defined benefits.
We're going to be looking at this the rest of the year. Andy Medici, thanks so much for being with us, and we'll talk to you next week. See all of you here, we hope, next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Have a good week.